Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 20. "Good morning, Katie. How are you feeling?" asked the doctor. "I feel a little sore on the back of my shoulder, but at least it doesn't feel like it's packed in cotton," said Katie. "Well, if you promise to avoid high heart rate events like running or other intense activities, I'm prepared to release you," said the doctor. Colonel, flipping through her papers. "Oh, I promise," said Katie. "I know you won't leave her side, right?" said the doctor to Dick. "Hey, a Katie on wheels is better than no Katie at all," said Dick, smiling. "Okay, I'm going to prescribe something to help you retain your serotonin that should keep the pain from making you irritable. I don't normally prescribe painkillers. This is a military facility, and we've had some bad luck with those on the long term. Pain keeps you real, if you know what I mean," said the doctor. "So does this mean I'm getting out of here today?" asked Katie. "It does. You can take a shower and wash the wounds. We don't bandage sutured wounds, so you can put some Neosporin on them to keep the stitches from itching and the tissues from getting infected. Other than that, we will see you back in 6 weeks," he said, folding his arms and waiting for them to answer. "We promise," said Dick. "I recommend you get some vitamin D, so make your way to the sunroom and get some light on your skin for an hour a day or so, okay?" he asked. "Nice. A tan would be good," she said. "The nurse will come back in a few minutes and release you officially," he said, smiling and holding out his hand to shake Dick's hand. "Thanks, Colonel, Doctor, Sir. You're the best," said Dick, shaking his hand and releasing it. The doctor walked out of the room, leaving the two of them alone. "You feeling like lunch at Bailey's?" asked Dick. "Oh, my God. Hot food? Hell yes," said Katie, swinging her feet out of the bed. "I hope my pants still fit." That's a good question. Unless you want to wear scrubs, I don't have anything to wear either. We'll blow this place and go home, take a shower, and get some threads," said Dick. "I have some sweatpants just in case," said Katie, rubbing her round belly. "Oh, I almost forgot about Edgar. I wonder if they have a maternity store down here," said Dick. "Well, there's always a muumuu," said Katie. "Be damned. I can't see your ass in a muumuu," he said, leaning over to kiss her on the lips. "Look who's talking, Mr. Tiny Butt," said Katie, slapping his behind as he turned around to walk to the closet. "It looks like two cats fighting in a pillowcase back there." "Hey, guys," said the male nurse, walking in the room. "Hey, Lieutenant Nurse. Been busy?" asked Dick. "Nope. No allergies, no stitches, no bar fights. What's a nurse to do with himself all day except visit you?" said the nurse. "I can talk to the bar and get them to lift that drinking limit," said Dick. "That would come from the CO, I'm afraid. Let's just get you guys out of here. I need you to sign this release and take this prescription to the pharmacy. We rarely see anyone have problems with this drug, but if you do, there is a number here on your copy you can call any time, night or day," said the nurse. "There is no night or day," said Dick, taking the prescription sheet. "Point well taken. I would say come back and see us, but perhaps that's probably not a good idea in your case," said the nurse, smiling. "Don't worry. We won't be back," said Dick, shaking the nurse's hand. "I'll get an orderly to bring you a wheelchair. You can keep it for a while if you like. The whole facility is ADA compliant, so there is really no place you cannot roll down here." "Good luck, people," said the nurse as he walked out the door. "I think the wheelchair is a good idea for a few days, don't you?" asked Dick. "You just want to push me around," said Katie, smiling. "It would run better with a V8 hooked to it," said Dick, smiling back. "Maybe they have one of those electric ones," said Katie. "I don't much go for scooter trash," said Dick. "I know what you mean," said Katie. "Okay, guys, this is our deluxe government model with very low miles," said the orderly, walking in the room behind a chrome and blue wheelchair. "I wonder what I can get for it on eBay," said Dick. "Slide off that bed, "Turn and have a seat, young lady," said the orderly, flipping the foot pads up and locking the brakes. "Thanks, Sarge. You're a good man if you never pull a plow," said Katie. "We aim to please," said the orderly. "Never use the word aim around me again," said Katie, sitting softly in the chair. "I'll take you to the pharmacy at the front of the building. After that, you're on your own." "You sure you can handle this baby?" asked the orderly, looking at Dick as he laid a small blanket across her lap. "Nice one, Sarge," said Dick. He followed them to the pharmacy window and slid the plastic bag with his clothes into the net pouch on the back of the seat as they rolled to the end of the hall and turned right to the pharmacy. He handed the woman in green scrubs behind the counter the prescription, and soon they had the small bottle in their hands. "Here we go," he said, rolling Katie toward the elevator and taking it to the ground floor. They rolled toward the glass doors on the other side of the lobby. "Take me home," said Katie. The two rolled slowly through the doors and onto the sidewalk outside. "I was going to say it's nice to get some fresh air, but that doesn't work, does it?" asked Dick. "Even a cave is better than a hospital," she said. They rolled down the wide sidewalk to Building D and soon were inside their two-bedroom apartment. "Let's take a shower and I'll buy you lunch," said Dick. "That's the best thing I've heard in 22 days, 6 hours, and 8 minutes," said Katie. "Try not to get too excited," said Dick. "Oh, screw that doctor," said Katie. "That's not exactly what I had in mind," said Dick as he quickly slipped out of the borrowed scrubs and hung his eye patch on the doorknob. "Easy there, driver. We take it slow around the curves, remember?" said Katie, waiting for Dick to get the water temperature just right. "This isn't as nice as the one in Kyle's Oak Ridge apartment, but it's plenty big and has an endless supply of hot water," said Dick, stepping into the tub enclosure and extending his right hand to invite her in with him. "Oh, now this feels good," said Katie as they softly embraced under the water. He held her gently and let the water run over his face as they kissed. His tears rinsed away as fast as they fell from his eyes in gratitude that she was here with him and safe in his arms. He pressed his lips softly against her neck and let his tongue rub her skin between his lips. She put her left hand around his waist and stroked his lower back, feeling her growing belly press against his solid stomach. "I love you, Dick Daring," she said into his ear as the water soaked her hair and ran down her back. "I love you more than air," he said, against her neck, holding his cheek against her slippery neck. "Turn around and I'll wash your back," and she reached for the loofah and the body wash. He placed his hands against the back wall and she scrubbed firmly from his neck to his upper legs. She moved against them and let her body rub the suds between them, and then let the shower rinse it away. "Your turn," he said, as they both turned around and she handed him the loofah. He was careful not to rub the clean wound over her shoulder blade. He squeezed the soap onto his chest and reached under her left arm with his to hold her breasts while his right arm went low across her belly, and he rubbed his soapy chest slowly against her back. "Your hairy chest is the best loofah ever," she said, gargling the water from the showerhead. "It's really the best way to get it clean," he said, biting her earlobe softly. "Let me wash your hair," she said. He released her slowly and stood back out of the water to let her fill her palm with shampoo. She scrubbed his scalp and heaped the suds up on his head, and as her hands rubbed his neck and his sideburns. "What are you going to do with all that shampoo on your hands?" he asked innocently. "Ah, now, doctor's orders," she said, playing playfully with her hands across his belly. "Okay, your turn," he said, letting her trade places with him as he scrubbed her scalp and massaged her head and her naturally wavy blonde hair. "It's grown," she said. "Rinse," he said, helping her balance with her eyes closed as soap ran over her eyebrows. "Wow, I can feel my head breathe again," she said. "I'll say, promise me you'll never shower without me," he said, holding her again. Are you kidding? You're my favorite shower toy, she said, kissing him deep in the lips. I want you to be Mrs. Daring, he said, still touching her lips with his. I want to be Mrs. Daring, she said instantly back. Let's go get something to eat, said Dick, kissing her again. Yes, sir, Mr. Daring, she said, reaching back to turn off the shower. The two of them dried off, and Katie started blow-drying her hair as Dick put it on his patch and went to the bedroom to dress. Within a few minutes, he heard the dryer turn off, and she came into the bedroom, naked and smiling. I've been thinking, he said, as she opened the drawer and slipped on her panties. That usually means trouble, she said, smiling. Do you think we could get the president to marry us, he said. You are his favorite street racer, she responded. Well, it never hurts to ask, he said, plopping down on the bed on his back. My mom would totally flip out, she said. Jesus, your mom! I totally spaced on that. We're down here and she's in Tennessee. Have you even called her? Asked Dick, sitting up on the edge of the bed. Not for a while. It's not like we have cell phones here. Besides, she's a lockstep blue pill zombie, and we don't talk much at all anyway, she said, trying to button a pair of jeans. What do you think she thinks now? He asked. Are you kidding? Shit, this isn't going to work, she spat, giving up on the jeans. Okay, cool your jets there, girl. You look great, he said. What, you want that I should go out of my panties? She said, kicking off the jeans. You're the hottest thing I've ever seen, but maybe you should try those sweatpants, he said, standing up to walk over and hug her. Yeah, you would think so, she said, trying not too hard to stop him from hugging her. You can wear my jeans, he said. I have worn your underwear before, but I would really be pissed off if your jeans didn't fit. Hand me that jogging suit hanging in the closet, she said. Yeah, that'll work. I see people wearing these all the time. It's orange. You know that, right? He asked. It's the Vols driver, she said. Oh, yeah, Tennessee. I get it. Well, I won't lose you in a parking lot, he said, pulling the two-piece outfit off the hanger. Said from a man who drives a purple car, she chided. It's man purple, he defended. Okay. Well, at least this fits. Hope there aren't any Alabama assholes out there, she said, pulling the orange hoodie over her freshly brushed hair and pushing the hood back over her back. We'll send a military expedition out to Dillard's to get you some proper duds, he said. I might be the only pregnant person down here, you know, she said, rubbing a little lotion on her hands and cheeks. Well, think of the baby shower you'll have, he said. I should have a damn monopoly, she said. We can get a bigger place, he said, wrapping his arms around her and putting his hands on her rear end. It's only going to get bigger from here, she said, wiggling it. As long as you don't need a beeper to back up, he said, squeezing her buns. It's all yours, Mr. Daring, she said, putting her hands around his lower back and kissing him. Makes me hungry. Let's go, we'll miss lunch, he said. Do I really need to sit in that god-awful wheelchair, she asked. Let's just walk slow. Think slow. Keep that heart rate at an idle, and we'll be fine. I'd rather hold your hand than the handles of that vintage piece of shit chair, said Dick, kissing her forehead. Deal. Hand me those sneakers over there. Who knows when we'll be able to buy another pair, said Katie. Shoes. We don't have much but government issue down here, but food we got. Let's make like a herd of turtles, baby, said Dick, clapping his hands. It didn't take long to stroll back to Building A and make their way to Chef Bailey's kitchen table. The halls were teeming with folks getting ready for noon chow, but the chef's kitchen was by invitation only. Dick and Katie were on a short list of permanent guests for the little white tables in the commercial kitchen of Chef Bailey. Oh, my God, look who's coming into my kitchen, said Chef Bailey as he carefully hugged Katie and firmly shook Dick's hand. I hope you have enough. I'm eating for two now, said Katie. Are you kidding? There's always a lamb for you, my girl, said the chef. We're a little early for lunch, but we have plans for the rest of the day, you know, said Dick. Oh, yeah. Places to go, too, I'll bet, said the chef, putting two cups and saucers on the table. Oh, decaf for me. I'm supposed to keep my heart at an idle for a while yet, said Katie. No worries. I have the best decaf under the planet, said the chef, smiling as he poured the cup full on the table. You still start with dessert, right? Asked Dick. The law of diminishing returns, said the chef. The what? Asked Katie. It's an undeniable truth that you should start with the best stuff first. That way you can eat it all without being overstuffed. You know, like trying to finish a sundae after six slices of pizza, said Dick. I convert people all the time, said the chef. I guess I never thought about it that way, said Katie. Well, you're going to turn into an eating machine over the next 4 months or so. Imagine what one of these babies tastes like on an empty stomach, said Dick, placing one of the chef's pastries on a small plate in front of her. Let's just find out, said Katie, picking it up between her fingers and biting into the creamy center. I can tell by the look on your face that you are now a believer, said the chef. Oh, like you had any doubt. Wow, every taste is perfect, said Katie. That's because the palate is like a clean canvas, said the chef. You do realize that this will change the human race as we know it, said Katie. It's been a full-time passion of mine for more than 40 years, my young convert, said the chef. I always said this is one of my favorite things about this planet, said Dick, biting into an eclair himself. That and fast cars, right? Asked Lorraine as she walked through the door in a full-length skirt with leather boots and a short burgundy vest open in the front over a khaki blouse. Hello, my dear, said the chef, kissing her on the cheek. Katie, I can't tell you how it fills me with joy to see you. I know you get all the worry stories, but it really means so much to see you whole again, said Lorraine. I have a ways to go. No redlining for a while, said Katie. She could still blow a gasket, so we're just cruising for now, said Dick, taking a sip of his coffee. Good for you. I do have some news for you, though, said Lorraine. Oh, I would love to hear some news, said Katie, putting her chin in her hands with her elbows on the table. I just came from a meeting with the president and agents Smith and Jones. They want to get Kyle and his gizmo up to the surface as soon as possible to see if they can get it to work, she said. Rut-row, said Dick, sounding like Scooby-Doo. You mean outside? Asked Katie. That's what we're going to do, said Lorraine. When are they going to do this? Asked Dick. I think they have in mind to do it tomorrow. If we don't do something soon, the lights are going out down here, and we will be crawling around on our hands and knees once the generators run out of fuel, said Lorraine. What does Kyle have? Asked Dick. You're asking me? I know he has discovered something, but it could make ice cream for all I know, said Lorraine. I have a feeling I know what it is, said Dick. You do? Asked Katie. Actually, it was the night we dropped you off in Irwin, remember? Asked Dick, wincing. Oh, yeah, the truck stop. How could I forget? Said Katie. I don't think I want to know about it. Just by the energy you two are dumping right now, said Lorraine, touching their shoulders. It was a little brother thing, said Dick. Well, anyway, I'm sure Kyle would love to have you there. I'm sure Smith and Jones will make it safe, said Lorraine. Just say when, said Dick. Yeah, Doc says I need some vitamin D anyway. Nothing like the real thing, said Katie. I will let them know, said Lorraine. So, are you ready for some homemade chicken pot pie? Asked the chef. Sounds divine, said Katie. They are individually baked, and I have 4 of them coming out right now. The veggies were dehydrated, and chicken was frozen, but the rest is made from scratch. said the chef as he set a ceramic bowl on each plate and put them in front of the trio. "Now that's what I call a pie of excellence," said Dick, sliding the spoon out of his mouth. "I know I've had this before, but it just keeps getting better," said Lorraine. "While you all are enjoying that, will you excuse me? I am going to check with my staff to make sure lunch is going all right and prepare some roast beef for supper," said the chef, grabbing his clipboard and a pencil. Lorraine scooted her chair a little closer to Katie and kept carving away the flaky crust around the ceramic bowl in front of her. "Katie, I can't tell you how happy it makes me that you have recovered from your accident," she began. "No one more than me, except maybe Dick," said Katie, looking sideways at her. "May I hold your hand while we talk?" asked Lorraine, changing the tone to a more serious one. "You're going to do that thing again." "Okay, sure," said Katie, laying her bare arm on the table in front of Lorraine. "Just right here will be fine," she said, adjusting Katie's arm where it looked more comfortable. "I wouldn't ordinarily ask this, but you are so special. I mean, you're the only woman with child in this entire underground city. I just want to..." "His name is Edgar," interrupted Katie. "We both have met him," said Dick. "Yeah, we had dreams," said Katie. "He was my father," said Dick quickly. "Okay, this is just between us for now. I just don't want to make the situation too strange for everyone else. May I?" repeated Lorraine as she held her hand over Katie's arm. "Sure, it's okay," said Katie. Lorraine attracted Katie's eyes to her peaceful blue eyes, and she lowered her hand to the thin arm lying on the table. Within an instant, the clear view of Katie's eyes changed hue behind a thick, rolling white and lavender haze. The walls of the little kitchen fell away like paper as the horizons opened to infinity. The room became light, and the sound of thousands of voices talking in low tones filled her mind. She became aware of the branches of trees above them. They were hundreds of feet tall, and there were no leaves on the dark, rich ground underneath their bare feet. Katie was standing there, in the center, dressed in a long white dress with a few thin green vines resting in the folds. Her blonde hair was long enough to reach her waist, and her blue eyes shone like sapphires. Through the ground beneath her feet were thin roots that sparkled like wires full of energy. It flowed outward to the trees and up their mighty trunks, shining like Christmas lights through the crimson bark all the way up to the bright green leaves that shimmered with shiny vessels of light. The trees were all connected to one another, and they were happy. Lorraine sniffled for a moment as her physical body came to the realization that the training of half a lifetime was altogether true. Trees did have feelings. They were witnesses to mankind's arrival on Earth. The feed of images and feelings came so fast she could scarcely contain it. The thoughts began to form in her mind as though a voice was speaking to her. "The gods are in the garden," came the sound through her soul. "What is it, Lorraine? What do you see?" asked Katie, on the verge of tears from looking at her expression. "We're going to make it," said Lorraine quietly. "Well, that's good news," said Dick, trying to snap them back to reality. "The planet needs us just as much as we need it. I mean, her," said Lorraine. "How does a planet need us?" asked Katie. "Someone has to mow the grass, you know, beat the wilderness into submission," said Dick. "Nature does not overgrow. It grows to the limits of the community to a natural balance. The fruit of the planet is there for our nourishment, and our love is all it needs in return," said Lorraine. "That sounds kind of 15th century. I mean, you're telling me that bulldozing the place and laying a strip of asphalt to drive our cars is a violation of nature. We put steel to the ground so that we can grow 50 times the amount of wheat or corn that anyone ever thought possible. We fly and sail and drive around the world every day, said Dick. Actually, it depends on how you look at it. Great technology is compatible with nature. Converting energy from one form to another can be divine, unless it means burning it, said Lorraine. You mean rotting is all good as long as it's not rapid oxidation, said Dick. Rapid oxidation? She asked. Fire. It means fire. And when we smash fire into a small place in the right proportions, we call it explosion, said Dick. I see your point. But don't you think it's a little primitive to still be burning our planet for energy? Said Lorraine. I've heard that before. I would drive electric. It's actually faster than gas-powered stuff. It's the method of recharging where we get in trouble. Hell, we're running everything with steam, said Dick. Like I said, converting energy can be divine, should be divine, said Lorraine. What I want to know is, what did you see? Asked Katie finally. You, my girl, might be carrying the firstborn of the new earth, said Lorraine. You mean Edgar? Asked Dick. Who? Asked Lorraine. It's Dick's father, my baby. He came to both of us at different times in our dreams, said Katie. Hey, don't look at me. I know what about all things Bible, said Dick. My God, the end really is here. This makes so much sense, said Lorraine, putting her hands over her mouth and nose in a praying fashion. That doesn't sound good, said Dick. No, I mean, no, it isn't bad. It means the guff is empty, said Lorraine. The gulf? Asked Katie, trying to hear better. No, the guff. It is the treasury of souls in the garden. The fruits of the tree of life fall into the guff, which is like an area for souls to wait their turn to be born into a mortal body. The roots of the tree cycles souls from the great world soul, said Lorraine, trying to keep up with the thoughts in her own mind. What does that mean, cycle? Asked Dick. Well, mortal life is a very complex thing to arrange, said Lorraine. What do they do with the aborted babies? What happens to those souls? Asked Katie. Humans persevere. The desire for a mortal life is only less than the desire to have another one, said Lorraine. You're saying that if one woman kills her baby, then the spirit that was going to be part of that mortal being has another chance to be born? Asked Katie. That's exactly what I'm saying. It has taken this many years to allow every soul a chance at mortal life, and now more of them are alive at one time on Earth than ever before. Why do you ask, Katie? Asked Lorraine. Katie paused for a moment, her eyes lowered. I had a sister, she began as her voice began to be choked off. My mother, and the tears began to flow as she closed her eyes. Dick gently reached over to hold her hand. She gripped it back firmly. It's okay, Katie. She came anyway. I believe she's somewhere, right now, here on this world, said Lorraine. But she's not here. I never told my mom I knew, said Katie. That's a hell of a backpack, said Dick. He's right, you know, said Lorraine, placing her hand on top of theirs. That's easier than it sounds, said Katie. I think your mom will know, said Dick. She'll get it, right? Asked Dick, looking at Lorraine. It is often said that forgiveness is for the forgiver, said Lorraine. Really? Asked Katie as her smile tried to push through her ebbing tears. It's your backpack, baby, said Dick. It was something he often said to his friends, as though they were standing around the pits at the racetrack. He tried to say it with love in his tone, wondering if it could be done. I know, okay? I thought about the baby for a long time, you know? That she was robbed of her chance. Then I was mad that she took away my sister. Then, later, I started to understand her reasons and the sadness behind her eyes when she stared at me from time to time. Like when I graduated from high school. Now I get it. So I forgive you, Mom. I forgive her, said Katie to Lorraine. That will do, Katie. My money says your mom is going to feel that. Believe me when I tell you this. Your mom is not alone. Tens of millions of women carry that same burden. Abortion hurts everyone, except the corporations that made billions off the industry. You did good, girl, said Lorraine. How are my favorite people? Did you get enough to eat? Asked the chef as he entered the room and grabbed a hand towel to wipe down the stainless steel counter. It was a habit that kept his kitchens sparkling all the time. I think we have overeaten. Again, said Lorraine, running her thumbs between the belt line of her long skirt and the blouse tucked into it. That's why we're here, said the chef. It was the best meal I've had in a month, said Dick. The best ever, chef, said Katie, smiling and wiping her face with the linen napkin. So, when are we going topside? Asked Dick, pointing to the ceiling of the kitchen. I have a meeting with the president this afternoon with agents Smith and Jones. This test is top priority. I'm sure Kyle would love to have you there. Can you meet me back here at 11 tonight? Asked Lorraine. Dessert before bedtime? Asked Katie with a bright smile. I have an addiction, said Lorraine, placing her hand on her tummy. There really isn't too much of a good thing, you know, said Dick, pushing back his chair and standing up slowly. You bet. We'll see you back here at 11. Thank you, Chef Bailey, for everything, said Katie, standing up to hug him around the neck. Oh, I've spent all the paychecks, but this goes in a different account. You have a great day, my dear, and you come back any time, said the chef, hugging her and patting her back with his hand. Thanks, chef, said Dick, shaking his hand. You two, make the rounds today. Everyone wants to see your smiling faces. Until tonight, said Lorraine, putting an arm around each of their necks and gently pulling them to her thick, curly, burgundy hair. She released them like doves, watching them walk out the kitchen door and into the wide hallway of Building A.